Welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us to the path where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of just defend positions. We have another purpose, too, and that is to provide context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. And speaking about contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming, it's time for that not-so-mellow melodrama that occurs every 4 years and yet seems to be in the news 24/7, the presidential election, the 2020 election. Here we are. We're already in a full news cycle about it. Once again, it's time for the dog and pony show, or bad dog, lame pony show called Electoral Politics, which seems to be designed to keep the American people occupied fighting over identity issues instead of gathering around the identical issues we all face, like clean air, clean water, clean food, clean government, and instead of cultivating the virtues and values that 90% of us hold in common, and then using those virtues and values to set a standard for governance. Now, of course, presidential campaigns have long been criticized as beauty pageants and popularity contests. Well, the 2016 campaign stood out in stark contrast. It was an ugly pageant and an unpopularity contest as people rushed to the polls to vote against the candidate they hated more. The results were conclusive. None of the above would have won in a landslide. So here we are once again with the undemocratic party establishment set on going back to what the voters didn't want in 2016 and polishing their image as, quote, we're not as bad as the other guys, unquote, while the democratic socialist insurgency seeks to fight the power and pull the party leftward. Now, in the midst of this deja vu scenario that handed Trump a victory in 2016, there's one candidate in my mind who stands out as sane, coherent, courageous, qualified, and on the scene to be of service, who is ready to bust the divide and conquer game that pits one group of us against the other for their own gain. That candidate is Representative Tulsi Gabbard, Democrat of Hawaii, who served as Bernie Sanders' campaign manager in 2016 in Hawaii, and then she resigned her position at the Democratic National Committee because of how she perceived Bernie to be cheated out of delegates by the DNC. We had an opportunity to meet her when she came to speak at the University of San Francisco on March 16th. We were not disappointed. On today's show, we're going to give Tulsi a platform to share her views as we replay the speech that she gave 2 weeks ago, and you'll be able to hear audience response and audience questions. Now, in addition to calling out corruption that is kept in place by both major parties, she announced herself ready, willing, and able to stand up to the military-industrial complex and repurpose billions of dollars toward the well-being of the American people, not the American empire. Now, keep in mind that none of the four most recent presidents, Bill Clinton, George Bush Jr., Obama, and Trump, has actually saw military duty. And yet every one of them has had no problem in dispatching troops to fight our wars of empire. Tulsi actually served in the military during the Iraq War. Consequently, she has no illusions about what war looks like. and she is decidedly against wars of regime change and is willing to stand up to the military-industrial complex. My BS detector tells me that Tulsi is real. She's a real person taking on this mission to be in service to our country and its people and not her ego. See if you agree as you listen to this, and we'll talk more after the first segment. So let's hear Tulsi Gabbard speaking in San Francisco, Saturday, March 16th.
Great way to start the day. Really, thank you all so much for making the time to come out here on this beautiful Saturday morning. Thank you, Sharon and Steve, for your kind words and introduction and helping to bring this all together. And I want to say thanks to the USF security team who are here on a Saturday morning. There they are. They're outside. They've been directing traffic and getting everyone in here. Give them a round of applause. It's tough sometimes when we see what is happening in our country. And what. Okay, you guys can't see me in the back?
No.
Is that better? All right. This is okay. Otherwise, I'd be like a mile away from you guys back there. There are a lot of challenges that we're facing. And it's heartbreaking to see in so many different ways how we're being torn apart as people, how our country is being divided, how that vision that our founders had for us as a country, as a united country with a government of, by, and for the people has been lost. It is hard to see, and it's heartbreaking to see how, because of that, people are suffering. Our family, our friends, our neighbors are dealing with things that we shouldn't have to be dealing with in this country. We're in a place where we have a government that is not of the people, by the people, and for the people, but rather a government that is controlled and influenced by self-serving politicians, greedy corporations, and those special interests who can afford to buy their seat at the table as laws are being made. And who pays the price? We do. Who suffers as a result? We do. Who is left behind? We are. The place that we are in as a country right now is exactly counter to the vision that our founders had for this great country, where we have leaders elected by the people who are of the people and for the people and whose sole interest and focus is on serving the interests of the people of this country, putting the well-being of our people, our planet, and our future at the forefront of those decisions that are being made. Instead, what we see is what's happening in Washington, where we have people who live in a bubble that is so disconnected from the reality that we are living in our lives across this country. And this corruption of spirit that's casting a dark shadow over us is what we must defeat. And there's only one way to do that. And to me, this is why we're gathered here today, because we care. We care for each other. We care for our country. We care for our planet and our future. And we want to do something about it, right?
Yes.
So you are why I am hopeful. Because gathering together in this spirit, in the spirit of what we in Hawaii call aloha, is truly the answer of how we overcome the challenges that we face. Now, a lot of people know aloha is a word that means hello or goodbye, right? Because this is how we greet each other in Hawaii. But there's a reason why we start our conversations and our gatherings with this word aloha. Because there is so much power in what it actually means. That when we greet each other with aloha, when we gather in this spirit of aloha, what we're really saying is, I love you. I care for you. I respect you. And I recognize that we are all brothers and sisters. We are all children of God, regardless of where we come from or the color of our skin, who we love, how much money we make or don't make, what kind of education we have. All of these things that are so often used to divide us, whether it's by politicians or corporations or people in positions of power who pit one group of us against the other for their own gain, who tear us apart, raising fear and suspicions and fomenting bigotry between us for their own gain without any care for the pain and the harm and the impact that it has on all of us. This aloha spirit is what has the power to defeat that darkness with that love and care for each other and that love for our country. It is this spirit of aloha that unites us, that reminds us and inspires us about how we can build that path forward, that path that leads us to a future that is bright, that is peaceful, that is prosperous, that provides that opportunity and justice and equality for every single one of us. As we look throughout history, especially during those darkest moments, and we see how we have found our way through, it has always been when we the people stand up, when we stand together, when we speak as one for what is right and what is just and for each other. And it is this time that we are in now that calls upon us to once again rise up and stand together, knowing that when we do that, when we stand together, motivated by this care for each other, this love for our country, there is no obstacle that we cannot overcome. The obstacles seem great, and this is why sometimes it's easy to feel disheartened and frustrated and see, how do we move forward? How can we ever overcome? Just a couple of weekends ago, in the days leading up to the anniversary of Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama, I had a chance to go and walk on a civil rights pilgrimage led by Congressman John Lewis, who was one of the youngest leaders of the civil rights movement at that time. And it was an incredible experience to hear directly from him as we walked through those steps, where he and Dr. King and so many others were beaten and bloodied, were called every name under the book, were threatened, their very lives on the line as they worked for justice. They worked for equality. They worked for the right to vote to make sure that their voices were heard. And it was heart-wrenching to hear from him about what they went through, but so inspiring because of how they responded to that hatred and that darkness, how they responded to that physical violence that they endured. They did not respond to that hate with hate. As Dr. King said, they knew that darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. That hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Their example and those wise words are what inspires us today and show us, that light that path forward for us on how we can bring about the real change that we need to see. How we can pass legislation like Medicare for All to make sure that every single person in this country has the care that they need. Yeah. lighting that path forward, showing us how we, the people, can bring about real criminal justice reform. How we can pass legislation that I've introduced to end the federal prohibition on marijuana. That will have an incredible impact on this country. In this press conference that we held as we were introducing this legislation, which is the only bipartisan piece of legislation to end the federal prohibition on marijuana in Congress, we had a few people there who shared their stories. We had small business owners and people who were working on providing medical marijuana to those who need it. We had researchers who were gathering evidence and data to say this is important to help impact people's lives. We had people who were helping those who are fighting opioid addiction and who were seeing every day how in places where medical marijuana is legal, opioid addiction is dropping, opioid-related deaths are decreasing, and people who are going through very difficult problems are finally finding help. We also had a guy named Harry from Virginia who was there who shared his own story about how when he was in college, about 10 years ago, studying computer science, furthering himself and seeking better opportunities, he was convicted of marijuana possession and thrown into prison for 10 years, two mandatory minimum sentences of 5 years each because of possession of marijuana. He talked about how his cellmate was convicted of murder, and he got out of prison before Harry did. The injustice that exists within our country because of the failed war on drugs and our broken criminal justice system and who it's impacting has to end so that we don't have another generation of people whose lives are ruined and who we lose to this failed war on drugs.
Okay, we have, this is Steve Bierman here. We're going to be right back with more from Tulsi Gabbard after these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization. Their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, hello there. This is Steve Bierman. We're back again with segment two of Wiki Politiki, and we're going to hear a little bit more from Representative Tulsi Gabbard's talk in San Francisco on March 16th. So let's go right into that, and I'll have some comments at the end of the segment.
You know, there are a lot of different issues that we need to address. I've mentioned a few of them. Dealing with the climate crisis that we're facing in this country and in the world is an urgent one that we all must stand up to demand real change to address. We've been talking about this issue for a while. We've been talking about how our policies and the way that we live has a negative impact on our environment. But we have not yet seen that kind of bold action and recognition from our leaders. That has to change. We also have to recognize how important it is that even as we take aggressive action to address this climate crisis in this country, that alone will not be enough. This is a problem that is facing our planet. It is facing every country in this world, and in order to tackle it, it will require us to build relationships based on cooperation, not conflict, with other countries in the world, and work together to address this crisis. Doing things like re-entering the Paris Accords is a necessary and important step, but that alone will not be enough. Retracting from the world and treating other countries in this zero-sum mentality where you're either with us or against us, with this approach of conflict rather than cooperation, must end. Because it threatens our future. I want to close by talking about an issue that is central to all of these others that are pressing and urgent and impact our everyday lives, and that is the issue of the cost of war. I am a major in the Army National Guard, been serving now for almost 15 years. Deployed twice to the Middle East, where I served in a medical unit on that first deployment to Iraq in 2005, where I saw firsthand every day the high human cost of war and who pays the price. I saw it in friends of mine who were killed in combat, who never made that trip home with us. I see it in my brothers and sisters, our veterans, who continue to pay the price after coming home, dealing with wounds, both visible and invisible. The lack of quality care and benefits provided to them to help them when they come home. But the price for these wars that people don't often recognize is the one that every single one of us pays. The fact that we are spending trillions of dollars on wasteful regime change wars, on this new Cold War between the United States and nuclear-armed countries like Russia and China as tensions continue to increase, and this nuclear arms race that has been kicked off by actions like the one President Trump took recently in withdrawing from this historic INF treaty negotiated between Reagan and Gorbachev. These actions have put us as a country and the world in a position where we are at a greater risk of nuclear catastrophe than ever before in history. Now, what's interesting is, as I share this information and talk about these issues with leaders in Washington, they say, really? Really? More than the Cuban Missile Crisis? More than the Cold War with the Soviet Union? Yes, the answer is yes. This is the reality of the threat, the existential threat we're facing today, and it should alarm every one of us here that leaders in Washington are either not paying attention, they don't know, or they don't care. This should alarm every one of us because that means not only are we not addressing this threat, but the actions that leaders in Washington are taking are actually making it worse. I want to get to why I bring this issue up and why it's important to every one of us. We in Hawaii had a huge wake-up call about a year ago when there was a text alert that went out to over a million phones all across our state that said, missile incoming, seek shelter immediately. This is not a drill. I want to let that sink in for a second. So we all have phones in our pockets. Imagine that on a Saturday morning, like the one we are gathered here today, people in Hawaii were just waking up, maybe thinking about, maybe I'm going to go to the beach today or go hang out with my friends, when this message comes across their phones. Think about what you would do and how you would feel, who you would think about, where you would go if you got that message as we're sitting here today, knowing that there are just minutes to live. It was terrifying. People thought about, where can I take my family? Where can I find shelter? Where can we be safe? Father was trying to figure out which of his children he would spend the last minutes of his life with. Another lowered his little girl, couldn't have been more than 8 years old, down a manhole, thinking that may be the only place where she could be safe. That alert turned out to be false, but the reason why we reacted the way that we did is because this threat is real. And it's important for us to recognize this, not because we should sit here and be afraid and think we are doomed, but because we have to recognize the power it lies in our hands to make sure this is not our future. Because it doesn't have to be this way. We have the power and we must take action to change direction, to bend this arc away from war and towards peace, to make sure that our foreign policy is one that actually serves the interests of our people, that secures our country and furthers us closer to peace rather than nuclear catastrophe and war. This is why I'm running for president. This is why I'm running for president, because none of you should have to go through what we went through in Hawaii. No family in this country should have to go through what our families went through in Hawaii. Not a single person in this country should have to live at any point in the day thinking about, what would I do if I got that message? We must change our foreign policy, the way we are relating to different countries, and build those relationships based on cooperation, not conflict, and work towards this future where we are getting rid of nuclear weapons rather than building more of them. To build this future where we are taking those trillions of dollars being spent on wasteful regime change wars and a nuclear arms race, and taking those dollars and bringing them to serve the needs of people here at home. To make sure our kids have a great education and a great future. To invest in a green, renewable, energy-based economy that serves us today and for generations to come. To make sure that we're investing in the right kind of infrastructure and sustainable agriculture. There are so many things that we need to do right now to invest in a bright future for every single American. In order to do that, we have to change that course that we are on. Take those dollars, end those wasteful regime change wars, this nuclear arms race and new Cold War, and put those dollars, place our priorities where they need to be, which is right here on our people, on our families, and on our future. Now, in order to do that, this requires strong leadership. Leadership and all of us standing together, standing up against those in the military-industrial complex and those who have benefit and continue to push for these regime change wars and this nuclear arms race. The only thing that will overcome those powerful forces that have ruled over both parties in Washington for far too long are us, we the people. We the people. We the people are the only ones who have the power to make this change. No one else is going to do it for us. We cannot forget or underestimate the power that we have in our own hands. And we cannot take lightly the threats that we face and the urgent need for us to stand up, speak out, and make sure that our voices are heard now. Not tomorrow, not next year, not in 5 years or 10 years, now. Our future is in our hands. I ask for your support. I ask you to stand with me.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was Tulsi Gabbard speaking here in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago. We'll be back in the third segment with her Q&A, the final piece. So what do you think? What do you think? We got to see her. We got to watch her face. We got to watch people watch her. We got to hear her. And my take was very, very positive, that I didn't see a lot of ego there. I saw somebody who has been in service. And as I mentioned earlier, we've had four presidents in a row that did not serve during wartime. And so they didn't have the experience of, seeing friends blown up. They didn't have the experience of seeing the destruction that that we wreak on other countries. And just as most of us have kept a comfortable distance from the kind of perpetrations that we've had on behalf of the American empire during our lifetime. And that's why I think that right now, the face that we have on our empire, the face of Donald Trump, the face of the dark of heartlessness, is the exact proper face that we need to face to see who we've been, what we've done. And a candidate like Tulsi Gabbard, I think the main point that she's making is calling us forward. Leadership is all of us standing together, recognizing that we have the future in our hands. And until now, we've been divided and we've been conquered. We've been divided into two tribes. We've been divided into the culture wars ever since the Vietnam War. We've been divided into fighting amongst one another, which makes us much more manageable, makes it much easier for us to not gather together and go, wait a minute, don't we all want to have honest governance? Don't we all want to have transparency? Certainly more than 90% of us want money out of government, and yet money out of our election systems. And yet we seem to go election after election after election with the usual suspects who are highly suspect at this point. And that's why so many people have turned off to the process, have tuned out, and decide that they don't really care, that they don't really want to elect anybody. Interestingly, Tulsi's talk leads us to a project that I've been very excited about for the 2 years that I've known about it. It's called the National Town Square. And this would be a totally independent new institution of society. We could think of it as freedom of assembly 3.0, where there is a place and space where every American can have an account that is verifiable, that is authenticated, where they can voice a vote on any issue that's up in front of the country. Now imagine if 200 or 250 million Americans weigh in, particularly on those issues where the political establishment, the political industrial complex, wants things to stay the way they were. Imagine if 60 or 70 or 80 or 90% of us said we want this. It kind of reminds me of the that wonderful moment that Francis Moore LePay writes about in Gandhi's quest for freedom for the British people. And the turning point in this campaign was when he realized that the people of India outnumbered the British colonials by 300,000 to 1. Think about that. Do the math and do the aftermath. So as we the people have, if and when we the people have a place that we can gather that is independent from government, from corporations, from mainstream media, that has total transparency, where there are no bots, only real authenticated people voting, we can actually get a gauge of what we really think and feel and how we can speak coherently as one voice. And this is really what Tulsi has been reaching for in her presentation, that we actually learn to cooperate together instead of be in conflict. And this is the leadership of the future. So if you listen to her, and I had a chance to look at her and watch her, I didn't see a lot of egoic presence. I saw a woman who is a martial artist, who is a military trained, who knows herself, and I didn't see a lot of quote-unquote glory for her in this. And it was truly a rare opportunity to see somebody who really is a public servant and willing to serve we the people instead of willing to serve those who pay the bills. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear a little more from Tulsi and the Q&A. This is Steve Behrman on WikiPolitiki Radio.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the WikiPolitiki sponsors page.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman back on WikiPolitiki with segment three, featuring a talk by Representative Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, who is running for president. And this is the Q&A part, so we'll go right into that, and then I will probably have a few comments at the end. So take it away, Tulsi.
Thank you all so much. We got time for I've talked for way too long, apparently, so we're going to try to take a couple of questions and then hopefully have some time to be able to meet with you here. Yes, sir.
Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming to my alma mater for this town hall. I'm Alan Wong. I'm an elected California Democratic Party delegate.
Thank you for your service.
And a military police lieutenant with the Army National Guard.
I am also a military police officer. Where can I ask, where'd you go to OCS, or how'd you get here?
Fort Benning, Georgia.
All right, very cool.
During the recent 2 years, there's been a number of fires in California that have destroyed cities like Santa Rosa and Paradise, California, causing a tremendous loss of life and homes. My soldiers and I were activated to those fires. I saw soldiers that made sacrifices that caused them to lose jobs and drop out of their semester in order to serve. How can you, as president, enable California to mitigate and prevent such disasters and prevent such tremendous loss of life and property?
Thank you very much for your service. Thank you for your leadership and your troops in responding and stepping up to serve the people of California during those times of disaster. I'm grateful to also serve in the Army National Guard for times like that, where we can actually help and serve our neighbors and our friends during their time of greatest need. This is a problem that California has felt in such a deep and devastating way. But it speaks to a deeper issue that has impacted and continues to impact families and communities across this country as we deal with the climate crisis that we are facing and the ramifications of it. This is a problem that California alone can't solve. It's a problem that we need to tackle aggressively and strongly as a country because it is impacting us in different ways and it keeps getting worse. Like I mentioned before, this requires bold leadership, yes, at the federal level, yes, at the state level, yes, at the local level, and in every one of our lives, but also recognizing that this requires a global response to a global crisis. Right now, the leadership in this country is not doing enough to build those partnerships and relationships with other countries to see how we can take that kind of necessary action. That's what I will change, and that's the kind of leadership that I'll bring to the White House as your president and commander-in-chief.
Thank you for being here. I work here at the wastewater plant in the city, and throughout the nation, the infrastructure is crumbling, the bridges, the water, wastewater. As a president, what would you do different to make sure our infrastructure gets the better grade? Right now, it gets failed.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. You know, in my home state of Hawaii, if you couldn't hear in the back, the question was about our crumbling infrastructure. He works in the wastewater programs here in the city and the woefully lacking resources to address our failing infrastructure. What's happening here is unfortunately a challenge and a problem that every community across the country is facing. The Army Corps of Engineers in my home state of Hawaii alone put an estimate at the infrastructure needs in our little state at over $1 billion. So multiply that by communities across this country in places here in San Francisco, in places like Flint, Michigan, where people are being poisoned and sick because of their failed infrastructure and polluted water. These are things that are happening all across this country, and people's voices are not being heard about how our failing infrastructure is directly impacting our health and well-being. Passing a big infrastructure bill, making those investments, should be something that is a bipartisan concern because it impacts every community in this country. Now, if you look at people in Washington say, well, look, there's just not enough money. There's just not enough money to make sure that people have clean water to drink. There's just not enough money to make sure that our roads are safe to drive on, that our bridges are not going to fail us. There's just not enough money. But these are the very same people who continue to vote for and to advocate for spending trillions of dollars on wasteful regime change wars or nuclear weapons that make us less safe, that increase suffering in the people in the countries where we wage these wars, that strengthen terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda, undermining our own national security, what to speak of the cost that is borne by our men and women in uniform. So you ask what I will change. I will change our priorities in this country and set them right so we stop wasting trillions of all of our dollars on these wasteful, counterproductive wars and dedicate them to rebuilding our infrastructure, to taking care of these urgent needs that we have in communities all across this country. You will hear a lot of empty promises from politicians about all of the great things that they want to do for you. But unless you have someone in the White House who has that courage and that experience and leadership to bring about that change so that we are taking those trillions of dollars and bringing them here, then those promises will remain empty and unfulfilled. That's the change that I'm bringing and that I'm offering to you. Thank you.
Let me hand you this so people can hear you.
I just want to say I'm so thankful to have the opportunity to hear you speak in person. I know you from the 2016 primary when Bernie Sanders ran. Just listening to you today, I feel like you have very similar beliefs and principles in terms of power to see turning this country around. And I'm so grateful because I believe it is unity between people who care about this country who make a difference. I just want to give you an opportunity to speak about how you feel, what separates you from Bernie Sanders, since you're both running this time.
Yeah.
And second, I have a second question. And that is, I understand you practice the faith of Hinduism, and I'm wondering how that affects how you work as a politician and how it affects your decision making.
Thank you. Bernie remains a good friend, and I think he brings such an important voice to this country and the conversations that we're having. My decision to run for president was really based on that recognition that the most important job that a president has is as commander-in-chief. So the experiences that I have of serving as a soldier for almost 15 years, of being deployed to the Middle East and seeing and experiencing firsthand the cost of war and the consequences of the failed policies of this country directly, firsthand. I am not someone who is going to go into the White House and sit back and rely on the foreign policy establishment in Washington to tell me what to do. I don't have to. That is what differentiates me from every other candidate who's running for president right now, is because I'm walking in on day one with that experience, both as a soldier directly, but also as a member of Congress who served on the Armed Services and Foreign Affairs Committees for years, who's engaged with leaders of other countries, who's held the feet to the fire of people like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm not intimidated by the stars that someone wears on their shoulders. I'm not intimidated by the military-industrial complex and what they're pushing for. I'm not running for president to be president. I'm running for president to be able to bring about this sea change in our foreign policy that is so necessary for us and for the world, and I'm most qualified to do that. Really quick, I want to briefly answer. I'm a practicing Hindu. I practice Bhakti Yoga and Karma Yoga. Dedicate my life to do my best every day to be of service to God and to be of service to others. That pretty much sums up my spiritual foundation and my motivation throughout my life. Thank you.
Hello, ma'am.
What's your name?
Anika.
Nice to meet you.
So again, only 15. This is the first presidential campaign I've ever been involved with.
Awesome.
I know that you're only in your 30s, and I think it's really endearing that you're running at such a young age. And as the potential youngest president of the United States in the history of this country, what do you plan on catering to the younger citizens of America?
Good question. What matters most to what I bring to the White House and the presidency is the experience and the perspective that I bring. In 2020, millennials will be the largest demographic of any, and the first time that millennials will actually be that majority demographic to determine what kind of future we want for ourselves. It's important. It's to me, this is not about cater. Well, I'm going to cater to quote-unquote young people or this group or that group or that group. The message that I have shared with you today about why I'm running and the kind of change that I seek to bring about is the kind of change that serves every person in this country. Not just one group or another, not one age or another, one race or another, one religion or another. This is about every single one of us. And the key to that, rather than pandering to one group or another, the kind of change that we're talking about is centered around putting people first, putting people ahead of profits, putting people ahead of politics, putting people ahead of the powerful, really working and centering our policies around how does this best serve the people of this country and our planet. That's my goal. That's my objective. Thank you all so much.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was Tulsi Gabbard, representative from Hawaii, and she has thrown her hat, if she has a hat, in the ring as a presidential candidate. I would love to see her get her 65,000 individual contributions in the next 6 weeks so that she can also be part of the debate, because I think she has something to say. I want to pull out one quote, something that she said that I think really sets her apart. Quote, I'm not running for president to be president. I'm running to be able to bring about sea change in our foreign policy so necessary for us and the world. And you know what? This has been the elephant and the donkey in the living room. Both political parties have acquiesced to the same dominate or be dominated foreign policy. And for the last 8 years prior to Trump, we had a very nice Obama face on top of it, but as my cohort, the Swami, says, the empire has a new face, but still has the same big fat ass. And so here we have a candidate who is willing to look that in the eye and stand for us. Now, that's the next important thing, because the missing piece in government of, by, and for the people has been, strangely enough, the people. We've been missing. We've been AWOL. We've been cut out of the process. It's so interesting that there's so much focus put on public opinion, public opinion, public opinion. But how about public will? How about public will? How about our acting together in concert, in coherence, in common good, common benefit for the benefit of each and all? And I think that this candidacy stands for that more than any than I'm familiar with right now. You know, I think that what she is calling for is essentially what Rianne Eisler, author of Chalice and the Blade and the Partnership Society, called a partnership society. Rianne Eisler did a lot of research. She found a lot of research on ancient cultures, particularly quote-unquote matriarchal cultures, and found that there were no in all of the accoutrement that were around these people, there were no weapons. They didn't find any weapons. And so the conclusion that she made is that in these matriarchal societies, we was not domination by women. It was domination by nobody. It was partnership. It was egalitarian. There was no bullying. And one of the most significant interviews I did last year was with Stephen Newcomb, who wrote a book on the doctrine of discovery, the papal bull that was issued in the 1450s that essentially gave the white conquistadors, quote unquote, permission to do what they will, to take whatever they wanted, to treat people however they wanted, because the people who were non-white, non-Christian, were non-people. And this dominate or be dominated has been an invisible meme. It's been the invisible way that we have gotten to where we are today. And we've seen the dominance of the power of money. And now what we need, and I think that Tulsi Gabbard's candidacy is a very good focal point for this. It's actually focusing around virtues and values, around the sacred, whether we call it religious sacred or the sacredness of the web of life, that 90% of us share. So listen to this, and if you feel moved, you can go to the WikiPolitiki website, find out more about Tulsi Gabbard's candidacy, make a contribution, and we'll catch you next week on WikiPolitiki. Steve Behrman, goodbye.